This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, May 24th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Later on the program, columnist John Brummett on what role Mike Huckabee will have now that he's not running for the White House and the future of state legislative redistricting. Plus, Kevin Kinder gets us ready for Wakarusa, which begins early next month, and more. First, though, the latest from Joplin.
Yesterday, Joplin Public School District announced that the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education canceled school for the remainder of the year after a tornado destroyed much of the school district's infrastructure. The district webpage is down, but on its Facebook page, Joplin School Superintendent C.J. Huff announced district officials are concentrating on locating all students, teachers, and staff members. According to the Joplin Globe, of the district's 7,700 students, more than 4,800 are displaced.
Most of Joplin High School's 455 graduating seniors were returning home from commencement ceremonies Sunday afternoon at Missouri Southern State University as the tornado siren sounded. Statistics on deaths and injuries have yet to be released by the district. A spokesperson for the college, Rod Serving, told Ozarks at Large this morning the college was not damaged and is serving as one of a number of emergency staging areas. And according to the Joplin Globe, Joplin's Irving Elementary School and Middle School were destroyed by the storm. A new Eastside Middle School is heavily damaged, as well as a Catholic school and the district central office. Temporary administrative quarters have been set up to coordinate school district recovery efforts and reconstruction.
Adventure Subaru in Fayetteville is collecting donations of all kinds to help the victims of the Joplin tornado. Just drop by at 2781 North College Avenue. The Subaru parts truck will be out front, and when it's full, they'll run it up to Joplin. For more information, adventuresubaru.com or 479-251-2175.
And Thirst No More, a disaster relief organization, is responding to the tornado with a collection trailer at 1709 Johnson Road in Springdale. Items needed include tarps, plastic storage bins, flashlights, batteries, toiletries, sleeping bags, towels and washcloths, chainsaws, and bottled water. Those who want to give can swing by the church and leave their donation in the trailer. For more information, 422-5284. And Ozark Natural Foods in the Evelyn Hills Shopping Center in Fayetteville will be accepting food, blankets, personal items, pet food, clothing, and more throughout the week for the victims of the tornado in Joplin. Donations can be left at ONF in the entry vestibule. And if you'd like more information, 521-7558.
This is Ozarks at Large. It's not an election season, but political observers still have plenty to draw their attention. John Brummett, a political columnist for the Arkansas News Bureau, recently sat down with Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net to discuss the redrawing of legislative districts and about the role for former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee now that he's decided not to run for president.
He is a kingmaker to the extent that I think his TV show will now become a go-to place for the candidates. And he will be a figure that the serious candidates will need to court. I don't think he has any real kingmaking ability in terms of endorsements, but I think he becomes a required step for a candidate. You've got to deal with Huckabee and his showbiz and media essence. If you want to be Mitt Romney, you got to make up with Mike Huckabee and go on his show, for example, if you want to be president. So I think that. And I also think it's still possible that whoever gets the nomination in search for a running mate eventually might need to consider him if there's certain geographical, regional, or balancing sorts of things that he could provide. And it'd be interesting to see, if faced with that prospect, if Huckabee would be interested in that. It'd be interesting to see.
New regional and national polling suggests that the Republican wave that swept last year's elections may be subsiding as key independents and women move back to the middle ground or even towards Democratic candidates. It's a little early to be decisive, but clearly something's at work.
Nationally, I believe the pendulum, which is apt to swing back and forth many times between now and November 2012, is now swinging to the Democrats because, first, of the bin Laden action, but secondly, because, as you say, women, some independent voters, have recoiled a bit, I think, at probably an overplaying of their hand by the Republicans with this privatizing of Medicare, or semi-privatizing of Medicare, which was put out there, which became sort of a defining issue for the new Republican Congress, and which has now essentially been abandoned because it's not going anywhere. So politically, it was an unfortunate mistake for the Republicans, and it has cost them the prevailing public mood right now with that key demographic. If we vote today, Obama gets reelected nationally, as he does. And if we had voted 6 months ago, perhaps he wouldn't have been. Part of it has been Laden, part of it is the Republicans in Medicare and a backlash against that. Arkansas, as always, is different. I think we remain tipping Republican. The Republican consultants say their polling shows the same thing it showed last year, just a little less intensity. People aren't as mad about health care as they were, they're not as scared about the economy as they were, but they still are, just less so. But I think our tipping to a red state continues in Arkansas.
Big news in Arkansas late last week. Federal Judge Brian Miller ruled that it was time to end nearly $70 million in annual payments from the state to three school districts in Pulaski County for desegregation purposes. Is this decision monumental?
We don't know yet if the order by Judge Miller is monumental, because it was out of the blue, it was unexpected, it is unclear in some of its applications. The issue of whether the state may cease paying this extra large sum of money to these districts was not argued in recent pleadings. A ruling in that regard was not expected, and how it would apply fully is not clear in the order. I think we've got to wait to see if there are any rehearings or obviously somebody's going to appeal it before we know if it's monumental. It is, I'm making a little semantic difference, it's not yet monumental, but it is a major moment. For 30 or more years, we've dealt with federal courts trying to fix the Little Rock schools to get them desegregated and to get the achievement gap narrowed between minority students and majority students. And during that time, we've not desegregated, we've resegregated, and the achievement gap has not been narrowed substantially, if much at all. So it's obvious, and now we have an African-American judge saying it's not working. It hasn't worked. And sort of, and seeming frustration in his order, he's saying, we're just going to stop this. So that's a major moment, and it just goes to show that we're beginning to admit that you can't fix society's cancer with federal courts and with extra money. I think that's what we're beginning to realize. This ruling may not be the end statement on that, but it's a major incremental step in our coming to terms with that.
Finally, legislative redistricting, the redrawing of 135 House and Senate seats by the three-person Board of Apportionment, raises its profile this week as public hearings around the state get underway. What are we likely to see in the legislative redistricting arena?
The legislative redistricting process is always sort of closed. We went through the legislature doing the congressional redistricting, and it got a lot of attention because of the Fayetteville finger and because we're dealing with four districts that people can understand. When you start drawing 135 districts, 100 House districts, 35 Senate districts, you get into a lot of minutia and a lot of complex maps, and you could have little bitty Fayetteville fingers all over the state, and you really wouldn't know it. Rather than a public process, which the congressional redistricting largely was, legislative is done basically by three guys, or in this case two, who work with their staffs and then show us what they've done, and we have some public comment about it. I remember in 1980, we had a Republican governor and a legislative redistricting. Attorney General Steve Clark, Secretary of State Paul Revere did it, and Frank White complained that they never even bothered to tell him what they were doing. I think what's going to happen this time is that Governor Mike Beebe and Attorney General Dustin McDaniel are going to do it. And they have it in their desk drawer somewhere, the way it's going to be. And Mark Martin, the Republican Secretary of State, who has made four or five blunders that has not helped his situation, is not going to have anything to do with it. We may see, because of the strange population shifts in the state, situations in which two and three incumbents, particularly on the House side, get put into the same district. And it'll be interesting to see how partisan, how pro-democratic Beebe and McDaniel dare to be in that process. It'll be most interesting to see. That's what I'm looking for. Not who's affected or how are they affected, but does it look like they're playing a partisan hand? That's the only thing that might be a problem for them, because it's generally agreed by those two guys, particularly Beebe and McDaniel, that the Democratic Party overplayed its hand with the Fayetteville finger, and they'd said, why don't y'all pull back, as they eventually did. We'll see now how they play the legislative redistricting, where mischief could be more nuanced and under the radar.
Roby Brock talking with columnist John Brummett from the Arkansas News Bureau late last week. That conversation recorded in the Arkansas News Bureau headquarters in Little Rock. Support for content from TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com, and Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information available at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon, offering small business solutions, including high-speed mobile broadband, wireless email, global services, and push-to-talk. More information at a Verizon communications store or online at VZW.com/small business.
Mentored by Dr. Roy Penny, a group of University of Arkansas chemical engineering students have developed a water treatment system that can provide 3,000 gallons of clean drinking water without the use of electricity. The system hopes to provide potable water to people in developing or disaster-stricken regions. It recently won the Intel Innovation Award at Waste Management Education and Research Center's Environmental Design Contest at New Mexico State University. U of A students Alan Busick, Nathan Bearden, and Jennifer Herrera visited KUAF to talk to Ozarks at Large's Ithi Egnihotri Madolkar about the system's inner workings and its recent win at New Mexico State University.
This is a competition, and it's international design competition, and we picked a particular task. The particular task was for water purification.
And under this task, we had to purify or disinfect 3,000 gallons of water per day, and we needed to do this using only renewable energy sources. So the one that we picked was just to use human power combined with solar power. We built two different systems that would both meet that requirement.
Yeah, the systems were meant to be implemented in a third world country or a natural disaster stricken area.
Now, how did you come up with the idea for developing this kind of a system?
We looked at a bunch of different technologies, and we kind of settled on this as being the best that we thought that we could use.
I mean, there were many different technologies that all worked. However, we were trying to come up with the most cost-effective, and you know, we had two systems that were each under $2,000 to provide 3,000 gallons of water for a year.
Mm-hmm. And pretty much one of the systems, the bleach system, with $3, you can provide clean water for one person for an entire year.
How does it work?
Pretty much the system starts, both systems, the UV and the bleach system, they start with the pre-disinfection.
Okay.
The pre-disinfection consists of a sand filter, a treadle pump, and a 1 micron bag filled with 9 ounces of activated carbon.
Okay.
Then after the water goes through that pre-disinfection, then it goes through its disinfection step, which is either UV or bleach.
And it costs about $550
for the bleach system. The bleach system is $550, and the UV is $1,500. That's where the two systems divide, whether you're going to use bleach or you use UV to disinfect.
How big is the system? Is it portable?
It is portable. Actually, we had to drive it all the way out to New Mexico. Probably one of the biggest things was the treadle pump. It's a two-person pump that pretty much acts as a stairmaster. And underneath it, there are these cylinders that have check valve assemblies on them that allow it to prime with water and then discharge. And the sand filter is used to just clear up the water. It's like a clarifier of the water. It lowers the turbidity and just makes it clear. And then from there, whenever it goes into the disinfection system, whether it be UV or bleach, it'll get all the bacteria removed, killed, and from there on, it'll go on to some sort of storage tank. And we were able to haul around pretty much a whole system in the back of a pickup.
Mm-hmm. Now, your team won the Intel Innovation Award at the Waste Management Education and Research Center at New Mexico State University. Could you tell us something about that?
Well, it began April 2nd. It was just a few weeks ago. And there was a large collaboration of everyone wanting to do Task 7 because lots of people will want to clean up the water. And it's a huge problem that is applicable in many places. There were many other competitors, including Duke, Idaho State, LSU, as well as many others. But each of them had, we saw lots of different disinfection processes, including ceramic filters, ultrafiltration.
Innovation Award was given to the people that were most complete in their design and were most able to implement their system, or closest to being able to implement their system.
Okay.
So. And for implementation, actually, I had already submitted a proposal for the College of Engineering, and we had actually gotten funding through the College of Engineering and the Honors College to implement the bleach system in Haiti. We were going to travel there after graduation because all of our team members were seniors. But the day before we were going to go out to the competition, they told us that since Haiti has a travel watch, we couldn't go there.
Okay.
And so We had everything planned to implement the system, and currently right now I'm actually trying to talk to Engineers Without Borders or anybody else to see if we can find a region where we can get the system implemented. Okay. We wanted to put it to use. We don't want it to go to waste.
Absolutely. And how many people were working on this project along with you guys?
There were 17 members plus a couple of faculty advisors.
Mm-hmm. Did you face any roadblocks? Anything that you were working on or wasn't working out? And
Yes. Yep. Yes.
It was all a learning experience. The day before, we had a blowout on our pump. And so it was just one of those last minute things. We were just trying to get everything together right before we left. We had already had the pump loaded, and it was just sitting there in the back of the truck, and we were like, we got to fix this now because we're taking it tomorrow.
Yeah, when everything can go wrong. Mm-hmm.
But it was one of those things, like all the stars aligned and it just happened right.
Yes. Yes.
Thankfully, that's a great thing. Now, you have talked about certain applications of this research using it in disaster-stricken or developing countries who do not have access to clean water. Mm-hmm. Is there any other use for the system?
Well, the treadle pump is the largest piece, and mm-hmm. it's a little over 8 feet by about 4 feet by 5 feet tall. And that could be used for lots of things, actually. Say if someone wanted to irrigate their garden,
mm-hmm. yeah,
or something like that, they could use the sand filter to help clear it up and then take it through the pump and then just pump it on into their garden. Because usually whenever you're talking about gardens, you're not too worried about having a little bit of bacteria in it, mm-hmm. just as long as it's not really concentrated stuff like the stuff out of the wastewater.
Can you make a bigger model of that and maybe use it for a bigger population?
Well, you could actually do quite a few of them in parallel.
Oh, okay.
So whenever we tested it out, myself and one of the other teammates could get somewhere around 20 gallons a minute on it, the pump. But whenever we were using lighter people, around 100 pounds apiece, it was somewhere around 12 gallons a minute. But I think if you wanted to, you could scale it up, but we thought that for at least our competition, it got pretty expensive trying to scale up, so we decided not to go too high.
Okay. Now, you've done this research. Are you looking at something in the future, something similar, some other kind of research that might be important or relevant in this context?
Well, there are plenty of things on the system that could be improved and optimized.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we only worked on this for somewhere around 4 or 5 months, and there are people that spend years and decades mm-hmm. perfecting different water purification systems. So I think there's plenty that could be improved mm-hmm. If we could work on this and keep going. Mm-hmm. So if New Mexico decides to go ahead and have the competition task for water purification, I bet Dr. Penny's going to jump on that.
Each part of the design can be used for different aspects. Mm-hmm. To get that design out there for different applications would be great. The way we kind of went about the project is we wrote detailed operation plans so somebody could take it almost by themselves and set it up so they could, you know, have that opportunity to use it without us.
Most of the stuff was, or all of it was purchased from, say, Walmart, Lowe's, Hobby Lobby, places mm-hmm. like that you'd be able to find around here. And, you know, say whenever you get to a third world country, a lot of the materials still will be able to be found at the sites.
Okay.
But some materials probably would have to be shipped. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
University of Arkansas students Alan Busick, Nathan Bearden, and Jennifer Herrera talked with Ithi Agnihotri-Madolker during a visit to KUAF earlier this spring.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
Friday night, the Army Corps of Engineers began releasing water through Beaver Lake Dam spillway to ease flood storage capacity from recent heavy rains. The dam will continue to release into the White River, which leads to Table Rock Lake, with more precipitation expected. Yesterday afternoon, the Army Corps issued a warning to families living along the river below the dam to be aware of rising water levels. In April, a dozen families sustained flood damage, a repeat of the 2008 floods. Downstream residents have no access to flood insurance to pay for damages because Carroll County is not registered in the National Flood Insurance Program. The program provides low-cost, federally backed flood insurance to property owners and renters to recover from flood losses. But Dan Muma, Justice of the Peace for Carroll County District 2, is trying to remedy that. He pitched the idea to the Carroll County Quorum Court on Friday.
Previously informed the judge and a couple other JPs that I would be raising the issue with the intent to introduce it at that time and proceed with a full discussion over the period of the next number of months, whatever it takes for everybody to fully understand what the Federal Flood Insurance Program actually is, who administers it, who is covered by it, what it does do for people in the county, and what it does not do to people in the county.
The Carroll County Quorum Court has previously considered the issue but voted against it, saying administering the program would cost the county too much money. Dan Muma has arranged for a regional national flood insurance plan coordinator to assess the Carroll County Quorum Court during its regular meeting scheduled for June 17th.
The 56th Street Bridge across Spring Creek in Springdale is closed because of flooding this week. The bridge will stay shut to traffic until an evaluation can be made by the Arkansas State Highway Department. Arkansas native Lewis Epley has led efforts to make improvements along Highway 23 in Carroll County that leads into Eureka Springs. And because of those efforts, a section of Highway 23 south of Eureka Springs that stretches to the Madison County line is being named after Epley. He said he did extensive lobbying with the highway commissioners, the county judge, and state officials about a critical need to construct passing lanes.
I think everybody recognized the need, but of course, it all comes down to money, especially with highways. But Bobby Hopper, Springdale, was the highway commissioner at the time, and before his term on the highway commission expired, he got the other highway commissioners to do a minute order directing the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department to do a feasibility study on these passing lanes, and that ultimately led to the passing lanes being programmed, and we now have two of them fully operational.
Lewis Epley is a retired attorney and lives in Fayetteville. He held a 10-year term on the Board of Trustees of the University of Arkansas, served on the steering committee for the Campaign for the 21st Century for the University of Arkansas, and is past chair of the UA Foundation. A dedication and ribbon-cutting ceremony is scheduled for 4:30 today.
Realtors say home sales in Arkansas took a dip in April due to severe weather in the state. Amy Glover Bryant with the Arkansas Realtors Association says tornadoes and flooding put a damper on most sale efforts.
see, we were down 15% on the units sold for the month, so we're down 23% for April. And, you know, the weather's not helping a situation that already existed, which is that we're competing against the first-time home buyer's tax credit that was taking place this time last year.
Bryant says that tax credit last year accelerated sales by giving more people an incentive to buy homes in the state. She says sales should increase in the summer months.
Heavy rain, strong storms, and subsequent flash flooding have altered even the Fort Smith Little Theater auditions for their summer musical. Auditions for the FSLT production of The Sound of Music are now scheduled for Thursday and Friday this week at Goddard United Methodist Church at 7 o'clock each night. The production is scheduled for July 28th through August 7th. And three Arkansas Razorback baseball players are being honored with SEC honors today. The league announced James McCann, a junior catcher, was selected as the SEC Scholar Athlete of the Year, while sophomore pitcher DJ Baxendale was named to the All-SEC second team, and freshman Dominic Ficicello was named to the All-SEC freshman team and the All-SEC defensive team. The honors, voted on by league coaches, were announced this morning. Arkansas will open play in the SEC postseason tournament tomorrow morning at 9:30 against Alabama in Hoover, Alabama.
Students in the Alma School District are getting a day off from school today due to a power outage caused by storms that swept through the Arkansas River Valley last night. Ronnie Newton is the assistant superintendent for the Alma School District.
We have a bunch of power lines and power poles that were blown over, and trees have been uprooted and over them and shut down our power, and we still have one school, the high school, that's still without power as of this time. The rest of them got back on, and we have a lot of bus routes that have trees across the roads and power lines down over roads, and we have a portion of 71 here around the interstate that's closed off because of the heavy poles that have been pulled over, knocked down, or whatever.
Newton says he hopes power can be restored to the high school today so things can get back to normal tomorrow. He adds that several crews are working throughout the town to clear trees and power lines from the roads. Students and their families can stay updated on the status of tomorrow's classes through a variety of ways.
We have a computer system. Of course, you got to have power to get it, but it also goes to cell phones that all of our parents that signed on to it, and most of them did, signed on to it, getting notifications of emergency closings and such as that. We used it during the winter weather. They can get a message on their phone, text message, or voicemail. They can get an email, we did that this morning. And so we notify all of our people that have signed up for that by that. And, of course, we notify all the radio and television stations in the area. And if our computer, our server's up, we put it on our website, but of course our computer server's still down, so couldn't do that this morning because of power. But that's typically how we do it. Our parent notification system is being real helpful in that, you know, they get it on their cell phone, their home phone, or their home computer, messages sent out that automatically that way.
More information is available at almasd.net. It's Tuesday, May 24th, 2011, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Joining us now is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Oh, we're going to have another Italian lesson.
All right.
Frank Vignola and the Virtuoso Band are our pick for tonight. They're part of the Walton Art Center Artisphere Festival, and they're performing at 6 o'clock tonight at St. Catherine's at Belle Gable in Fayetteville. Get there early or be a really tiny person.
All right, because a small venue.
It is a tiny but beautiful venue. They also perform, however, at 6 o'clock tomorrow night at Thorncrown Chapel in Eureka Springs, and at 7 o'clock Thursday at the Crystal Bridges Sculpture Trail in Bentonville. Each concert is $5, and you can find out more at 443-5600.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy newsroom is Wayne Bell. He is the author of The Culture Club, the column found at FayettevilleFlyer.com. Lady Gaga has released her, is this her second full release? Because there are all these remixes and extended plays.
Yeah, she did her debut a few years ago, and then 2 years ago she did an extended version of that debut that included an EP that ended up winning, you know, best pop album for 6 songs at the Grammys. But then this is her third CD, her second full CD.
For the music industry, this is big news.
Big news. I think they've just been patiently waiting. Well, it's in a couple parts. I mean, she's been plugging this album since last summer, saying, you know, the greatest album of our generation is going to come out. And
that's a lot to live up to.
I don't know about that. But the music industry is excited because, you know, albums don't sell as well as they used to. And she is somebody who puts out albums. So they're really looking forward to this. They've been looking forward to it for a while. And it comes out this week. It actually comes out a day earlier than normal release date because I think they want to capitalize on that even more.
How popular is she? Can we put it in perspective? I mean, she gets compared a lot artistically and visually to Madonna. And there was a time when Madonna ruled the sales charts. Is she of that level?
Yeah, I think she is. And here's the thing about it. I think that regarding her, she does get a lot of comparisons to Madonna. And I think that some of that's fair. I mean, one of her songs, Born This Way, sounds exactly like Express Yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, even before those criticisms came out, I was listening to it and going, is this Express Yourself? But it's also kind of an unfair advantage. As much as I like Madonna, I would say Lady Gaga is a stronger vocalist than Madonna. Anybody who saw Saturday Night Live the other night knows that she's a strong vocalist and she plays a couple of instruments. And it's kind of like she's just expanded upon the Madonna template. But yeah, of course, she has capitalized on the crazy costumes and that sort of stuff, which is similar to Madonna in her heyday. So, yeah.
When I saw her on Saturday Night Live this weekend, she was sitting at the piano and belting out a ballad.
While wearing some weird costume.
Well, she looked like half Madonna, half Elton John from the 1970s. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a showmanship there mm-hmm. that she enjoys.
And she, you know, she's found a really good mix. I have to be honest, when she first came out with Just Dance a couple of years ago, when she was big in Europe first, I was slow to warm to her. And then she started having, you know, more hits. And it was really my other half who really fell for her first and then kind of introduced me to her more. Because at the beginning, I thought she was very odd, too. I thought I didn't quite get it. But then we went last summer to Dallas to see her, and I get it. I mean, I really get it now. Love her or hate her, she's really doing something different.
Well, what separates her from, say, other pop artists like Keisha?
Oh, K-E-double...
Right, but I mean...
$HA.
Yeah. She has had some big pop hits as well, some dance hits. So yeah. What's the difference? What makes Lady Gaga better or likely to last longer?
Well, the thing about Lady Gaga is, I think underneath it all, it's more talent. She does sound good live, and you know she's singing. She puts her heart into it. And if you know anything about her story, she's been around for years. She was a cabaret singer in New York for years. I mean, there's videos on YouTube of her, Stephanie Germanotta, if anybody mm-hmm. wants to look it up. And I think she did this in a way to express herself and in a way to get noticed. The way she separates herself from Kesha or Taylor Swift or some of the other big pop hits, I would say the biggest, you know, closest one chart-wise would probably be Katy Perry, is that there is a lot of talent there, and there's always an edge and a little bit of controversy. And in this past year, she's taken on a real political stance. So she's standing up for equal rights and for gay marriage and supporting certain candidates. So she's got quite a following. And for the first time in 4 years, Forbes magazine this past week listed her above Oprah as the most powerful entertainer in the world. And she pulled $95 million last year.
She's still relatively young.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's like 24, 25. And, you know, to have this much success. Now, I wouldn't say that it's all, you know, it's all gold, because she's run into some controversy. The meat dress mm-hmm. at the MTV Awards, wearing a dress of meat.
Literally.
Right. And then to say that it symbolized, if we don't give equal rights, it's like not having meat on our backs. Or her new song, Judas, has offended some of the Catholic Church. sort of similar to another Born, artist from the 80s. And there's been a little, you know, after Born This Way, there was a little backlash that it sounded just like Madonna, but then that ended up being her biggest hit so far in digital sales. And this is a woman who's got 1 billion YouTube hits. So she really is in a class of her own. And I don't think that it's one of those things where she's the fad of the moment, you know, that she's got 2 hits, maybe like Kesha or something, and then she goes away, because she's constantly reinventing herself. That being said, anybody who watched Saturday Night Live and has seen her in the past few months, she seems to, although there's still some of that crazy fashion element, she gave birth the other night, if anybody saw it on SNL.
It's very odd.
Very odd. She seems to be kind of paring that back a little bit. There's not as much obstruction on the face, and there's not as much of her myth. The costumes seem to be, although strange, a little simpler. And she seems to, instead of having, you know, strong sexual lyrics or something, it tends to be more about empowerment. And I think more of her actual artist is coming through instead of the label now. I don't think it's a fad. And I would say to those people listening, and there will be many who say, I just can't stand her. You try telling me you haven't sung a Lady Gaga song at some point in your car when no one's watching. That's the sign of it, you know, someone who's really into pop culture. Yeah, I know that when before I came in today, you were singing Poker Face.
Well, that's so, the one. That's the one. Wayne Bell writes the, have you heard the whole album yet? Have you had a chance
to? I have not heard the whole album, but I will go pick it up today. I know that Target in particular has a limited edition set that's got a lot of extra material. So that'll be interesting. And, you know, reviews have been kind of mixed for it, but it doesn't really matter because it'll sell huge.
All right. Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. Wayne, as always, thanks for your time.
Rah, 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 rah.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Kevin Kinder. Kevin covers music for Northwest Arkansas newspapers. And it's almost a music writer's Christmas time.
It certainly is. You know, not only do we have a couple concerts coming up at the AMP and the Walmart shareholders shows, which are free to the public, but we've got Wakarusa coming to Northwest Arkansas, specifically to Franklin County and Mulberry Mountain. And it's funny that you mention it that way. When I spoke with the festival's director, Brett Mossman, he told me, he's like, this is my Christmas. You know, this is what they work hard for every year. What they plan for, and it's all coming June 2nd through 5 at Mulberry Mountain.
4 nights, 4 days of music at several different stages.
6 different stages, sometimes working simultaneously, and there are, I think it's 150 sets of music between approximately 100 bands.
The thing with the festival, you can't see everybody.
You can't.
Because there are simultaneous performances, and you're supposed to sleep at some point.
Right, although most people won't.
Right. So what limited festival experience I have, I will take something out, and I will circle and try to make my own schedule, knowing that you may have to alter because one stage may be too packed or something. Do you do the same sort of thing?
Absolutely. And like you mentioned, it always changes on the fly. You know, you hear something as you pass by and think, oh, that sounds all right. What's going on here? Or you have to find time to eat at some point because really there is music almost 24 hours a day. And you actually have to plan to miss some music so you can eat or go to the restroom.
Stay hydrated.
Right. Any of these basic functions, you really have to take time out of music to get to. So, but I definitely have a lot of different acts that I plan to see. And the first bands take the stage at noon on Thursday. And music will continue until midnight Sunday night. So almost nonstop in between then. On Thursday, some of what I'm excited about, I don't really have a preference at noon. There are a couple different bands playing, but at 1 o'clock, a group from Texas called These United States are coming.
Having first left the tavern, then a tire upon the door knob. Little John awoke at noon and went to find a day job. Stumbling home much later through the evening just before. saw that tie was dangling from the door, and he said, I'd better find another place where I can sleep. Oh, it's one more hiding hole to put a secret I can keep. You know there's a certain honor amongst, a certain honor amongst thieves.
I actually missed them when they were in Fayetteville during South by Southwest time. I had a lot of friends who went, though, and highly recommended that set. So probably going to catch a little bit of their set. Move on to Dirtfoot, who comes from Louisiana, and they have played in the area before. They call themselves Cajun Grumble Boogie. It's really sort of eclectic mix of ska and rock, and it's always a good time, too. I'm going to follow those up with Those Darlins. They were recently here.
Yes, they were. And I just recently purchased their latest CD, and it's very good.
It is. Screws Get Loose.
Screws Get Loose.
Is the name of that album. They opened up for the Old 97s in, I think that concert was in February. It was a great show. And Those Darlins were the opening act and really put on a good show. And I'm excited to see them.
Female country band, but country doesn't really describe them.
It doesn't. They're a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll. And
but not Donnie and Marie.
But not Donnie and Marie. I prefer Those Darlins to Donnie and Marie. Along that same vein is the next act that I'm going to try to catch, and that's Truth and Salvage Company. They were actually discovered by the Black Crows.
Coming to your fast from sea to sea, chock full of life and loyalty. Love your smile, you're hysterical, beautiful individual. Whoa, 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 it's feeling pretty magical. Digging the feel of this atmosphere, enjoying the breeze and the salty air. Missing your smile is unbearable.
I'm going to travel next to Hugo. I do not know a lot about Hugo, other than right now you can find on YouTube a cover of him doing 99 Problems in a bluegrass style.
Okay.
So, interesting take. He's also got an album that just came out. Moving on to North Mississippi All-Stars, and it's billed as a duo. I do not know specifically what that means, but if you're familiar with the North Mississippi All-Stars, you know it's sort of Delta Blues done anew. It's good stuff. I do not know which of the members are the duo. It's normally a trio. But they're always worth seeing. I've watched them before, and Luther Dickinson is the lead guitarist. He also guests for the Black Crows, and he is, I think, one of the better guitarists in America.
Most of these sets are an hour, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Most,
you know,
of that, until you get to the headliner.
Exactly. Until you get to the headliners, it's a pretty short scenario. And they have about 15 minutes between stage time. So you can stay all day, and they really try to hustle bands back and forth. Minus the Bear, starting about 5:45 on Thursday afternoon. Very much alt rock and a lot of fun, at least according to their recordings. I haven't watched them live. Grace Potter and the Nocturnals, on the other hand, I have watched live several times, and that's not a set that I can miss this time around.
That's going to be crowded.
It should be, and that's on the main stage. So that's definitely one that I think a lot of people will go to. However, there are four other bands playing during the same time that Grace Potter is. So some of that crowd will be split. Buckethead is at 7:30. I don't know what to say about Buckethead other than he does play with the bucket on his head. It used to be a Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket. It's no longer branded, but he does wear a bucket, and he's also one of the best guitar players you will ever see live.
Okay. Kevin Kinder covers music for Northwest Arkansas newspapers and will be attending Wakarusa near Ozark on Mulberry Mountain. Tomorrow, he'll make suggestions for the second day of the festival that begins on Thursday, June 2nd. Songs included in today's segment: Honor Amongst Thieves by These United States, Jump the Ship by Truth and Salvation Company, Here's to the Meantime by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals, and This is Machete by Buckethead. Kevin blogs about local music and more at nwatunedin.com. Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from Artisphere, Arkansas's Arts and Nature Festival, featuring the National Geographic Live Speaker Series with photographer Joel Satori on May 31st. Events feature a one-hour presentation followed by a Q&A and book signing. Tickets and information are available at artisphearfestival.org or 443-5600.
A service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Raspberry.
And Raspberry?
Is in Pope County.
Pope County.
Yep.
Ever been to Raspberry?
Nope.
Nor have I. Ever heard of Raspberry before today?
I have not.
And nor have I.
I hope they have raspberries.
Surely, well, why else would they be called that?
Why not?
I don't know. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
A brand new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon.
Have a great day.
And thanks for listening.